There he is.
Chills every time.
Every time.
Love the now recording.
Yeah, actually, do they? People don't hear that on the podcast, right?
No, no one gets to hear Craig speak.
Ooh, Squid Boy is one of the first. Alex and Squid Boy get to hear Craig.
That's right. Everyone else has to wonder, what does that little beaver sound like? Welcome back to Corporate Strategy, the podcast that could have been an email. I'm Bruce.
And I'm Clark.
And as you may have heard in our pre-show ramblings, Squid Boy's with us. Constant contributor on the Corporate Fam Discord. Squid Boy, say hello to the people.
Hey, guys. Just finally on the podcast.
Yeah, finally. It's been too long. And we're super glad to have you here. You've joined us because our other frequent podcast correspondent, capitalist correspondent, Alex Restrepo, submitted a topic that we wanted to discuss with you today because you are the expert in this field. But before we get to that, how are things going? Let's do a vibe check real quick. Clark, how are you feeling this week?
I think this weekend I have like totally forgotten. I've just burned it from my memory what happened last week. Like I'm just blanking as you ask me this. I'm like, I have no idea. What even happened? Was last week a thing?
We're recording on a Sunday, so you know the weekend.
I've had all of Saturday just to purge the week from my mind.
Yeah,
but yeah. You know, I think this week was busy, but man, I don't know what's gotten into me. I'm just like ready. Like it feels like school again, where I'm just like I'm ready for summer. Like when is summer happening?
You don't get a summer break as an adult, unfortunately.
I know.
Sucks.
I do have some vacation plan though, so I am looking forward to that. So I think that's my mindset. I'm like, I'm waiting for summer vacation. You know, come on, bring it. How about you?
Well, let's ask Squid Boy because I don't really matter. Right, Squid Boy, what's your vibes like this week?
I mean, I'm kind of in the same boat as Clark. So you know, just waiting for summer. Things are just. Because things are a little bit more ramping up, you know, like Q1's a little slow and then Q2 just kind of, you know, gets hammered in. I feel like Q2 and Q4 are kind of the big busy days. So ready for summer.
Boy, howdy.
That is actually a really good point because it's Q1, you kind of, you know, get off the holidays. You're kind of ramping up on your goals for the year. And then at the end of Q1, you usually have that realization, wow, we're not close to what our goals were for this year. So it's like, let's pick this up and make sure we're going to, you know, sprint through Q2.
In marketing, Q2, Q3 are event season. Mm. So this is the nightmare sprint for me. I like, you know, we talked about this a little bit before we started recording. I'm going on a nice little vacay this week, just taking some time off with the wife for our 10-year anniversary.
Ooh,
but
big one.
Going from that vacay directly into RSA, the security conference, which, you know, appropriate for today's topic. But it's after RSA, it's nightmare after nightmare. It's let's go. Events. So I'm just doing my absolute best to stay in the moment and not think about all of the crap that I have to do pre, during, and post the event season showing up.
Well, first of all, congrats on 10 years. That is awesome. That is such a huge milestone.
It is. It's been a good 10 years too. No complaints.
I can't believe it's been 10 years. That is wild.
It is wild.
You know,
wild.
I actually think, knowing your wife, I think she would really enjoy going to RSA with you.
Oh, the sarcasm there.
Actually,
you know, funny.
We should vlog it and have her there doing the vlog and just like, what is going on here the whole entire time?
I mean, I'm going to be miserable. I can't imagine both of us being miserable together. That would be fantastic.
Oh, I love it.
Fun fact about my marriage and Clark. Clark's family was at my wedding, but he was not.
Yeah, isn't that weird?
It's weird.
Oh, like, I always think back to that. And I think I've had dreams about your wedding because my family, like, you know, told me all about it. And I was like, wow, this sounds incredible. So I know all about it. I just wasn't there.
Yeah.
You're going to have to Photoshop me to some pictures or something.
We should. There's some people I think we'd like to replace, so we need to do that.
There we go. I can at least step in. Can we do any news? You want to do news before we jump in?
Do any of y'all have news? I'm so unprepared.
I have ridiculous news. It's not really even news. It's just stupidity that's happening in the world right now. Why are people interviewing like 7 times for jobs and then getting denied?
Did you see the Restrepo post in the Discord?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's what I saw. And I was just like, this is insane. And it seems to be getting worse. Like, I've been in 7-round interviews and I was kind of commenting to some of the stuff that Alex threw on there. But it just feels like people are getting rejected. Like, I keep on seeing posts on Reddit just about people getting like the 7th interview and then getting rejected. Like, that is so terrible to go through that many interviews just to get rejected.
I don't know if you guys noticed the ghost jobs that are going around. That's becoming like more and more prevalent now. So people are just interviewing to interview, and there's actually not a job at the end of the whole process. So,
like, companies are posting it, and like they really don't have a job. They're just like actively recruiting and leading people on.
Yeah. So basically, to see what's out there for the company. So people are applying to these jobs that don't have any jobs associated with the company. It's just, oh, maybe we need this in the future. So, you know, start that interview process now, and maybe 3 months down the road or 6 months or whatever it is, they might be able to reach out to that person and say, hey, we got you a job.
I don't like that at all.
That is so awful. Do they realize like people's lives are dependent on this? Like, that's the thing that I hate about corporate. It's just like, okay, I get it. Always recruiting. You always want to have like a pipeline and a bench to be like, oh yeah, what about this person or this person? But kind of dangling the carrot just for nothing when it's like, yeah, my livelihood depends on this, and you're wasting someone's time who might be in a really bad situation. That's awful.
I think it takes a special kind of special to be in recruiting specifically, because I mean, there's just a part of you have to cut out your soul to be in that job, right? Yeah. Like, as a recruiter, you have to eliminate your feelings for your fellow man and woman and humanity in general. I would love to have a recruiter on the pod in the future and just be like, yo, how do you live? You know?
How do you sleep at night? And I don't blame them. I just want to be really clear on that. And I think you're saying the same thing.
Right. It's compartmentalization. It's got to be.
It's like, that's their job. That's their livelihood. But the hiring managers they have to work with, and like Squid Boy's explaining, like, they have to go against kind of probably their morals and ethics to be like, okay, there's nothing here, but I got to have a call with this person to explain to them the job. Like, that is probably the worst feeling.
The most interviews I've ever done was 3.
You're lucky. You are lucky.
Apparently. Looking at the posts in there, apparently I'm very lucky. What about you?
Squid Boy, you want to go first?
I think the most I've done is 5, but I'm looking at Alex's 10 or 12. It's just, I'm good. Yeah. I would give up. I think 5 is my limit. It's not worth the job after that.
No.
Yeah. It's literally like a full day that you've got to dedicate just to like back-to-back interviews. Yeah, the most I've had, if you include like the HR calls, like to, you know, do the initial screening and all that, probably 8. Probably 8 interviews. Ooh. Yeah. Cause it was like HR calls just to kind of like pre-qualify, make sure the salary's in range. And then it was like a series of 5 that were an hour each, and it happened over like 4 weeks. And basically just had to be like prep for those. And then it was another conversation with HR to like talk about, you know, what the next steps are. And then it was like a committee to be like, okay, well, let's try to find you a team. And I was like, okay, at this point, like, everybody I interviewed didn't make me excited for this at all. This really actually sucked. And it was for a thing. And I was like, even though I could do it, like, everybody I interviewed just felt like they were trying to prove something and didn't get me excited at all to work here. It was rough.
Do you think that job was a ghost job?
No, I think it was real, because I think there were some actual jobs behind it. It just, like, after all that, after the offer, after kind of like the people that I talked to, I was just like, I'm just not interested. This actually seems way worse. And so I just basically wasted like, you know, a whole day's worth of my time interviewing over, I think it was like a 2-month period. It was terrible.
Do you think you could have short circuited it like 4 interviews in and be like, nah, this isn't for me. I can tell already.
Probably. Yeah. I kept on like holding out hope, because I was like, man, it'd be really cool to work here. So I was like, it's got to get better, right? Like, I'll talk to someone who's excited about doing what they're doing. And all of them were just worse after worse.
Jeez. So, now that we've brought up the idea of the ghost job, I almost wonder if the long interview process is to help fulfill that, right? Like, if we just keep pushing this down the line, keep scheduling more interviews 4 weeks, 8 weeks out, it, you know, eventually there'll be a role. We'll get the budget. We'll clear it up. Because, I mean, 8 weeks, that's more than 2/3 of a quarter right there.
Yeah.
You could easily push someone into next quarter for an application just by doing that.
Very well could be. The worst part about all these interviews too, it's like, okay, you got like, you know, I think it was like a 6 month period to like find a team and then we'll formally extend you an offer and all that. And I was just like, so I could be like looking for a team for 6 months and doing more of these? Like, this is insane. So it just didn't make any sense to me.
And they probably make you work too, where you have to like do stuff prior to the interview, even though you're not being paid by them to present to them, I'm guessing. Yeah. So stupid.
It is ridiculous. The most corporate thing ever.
Ugh. Ugh. Don't like that news. Well, something great to look forward to in the future as you pursue new venues and new ventures. The ghost job. Putting that on the list of things I hate. Let's talk about our topic today. So this is something I know nothing about. And it came from Alex. He posted it in the Pod Topics channel. And Squidboy happily jumped in. Said he'd be down to talk. So let's just first define what it is. Offensive security. What is that, Squidboy?
Yeah, so offensive security is kind of what it's named. You know, it's kind of like you're attacking networks.
Okay.
Right? So this is, I mean, it's not even just networks. It could also be like social engineering, which, you know, we can get to later. Or wireless attacks, things of that nature. So anything cyber related. Now, this is super important for corporate networks because they're dealing with like millions and millions of dollars and they want that stuff secured, even for like a small business with just maybe even hundreds of thousands of dollars. So whenever you're working in offensive security, you simulate these attacks and then you write a report on it. Obviously, you're not taking down anything, but it's one of the cooler jobs in corporate, I would say, when you're working in offensive security. And I can go through each of the different branches as well.
So is what would the role be called of someone who does this kind of thing?
Yeah. So, you know, technically what I do is pen testing. So so you could be a pen tester. Most people put cybersecurity consultant because typically you're doing a lot of the pen testing or remediation. Or we like to also say GRC policy, so governance, risk, and compliance. And those are just policies that people have to follow. There is another one, so which is the, you know, obviously there's offensive security, then there's defensive, which is all the blue team stuff. People are, you know, basically managing firewalls, rotating passwords, looking at different ports that are open, and what have you. But I only work on the other side of the spectrum.
Got it. So you would say it's almost like you're actually trying to find vulnerabilities. So you're trying to like understand, you know, where are the gaps, expose them, write the reports on them. And then I'm assuming somebody's going to have the responsibility from there to actually, you know, mitigate them in some way, you know, put in a new piece of technology or patch the gap, something along those lines.
Exactly. So that's kind of, it's a really cool job. I'm not going to lie. Fun. So, I mean, it's like you get to hack, you know, corporate networks, you know, with legal restraints. But, I mean, it's, you know, you're hacking for a living.
Right. It's so, hacking, like, without malicious intent, because it's like you're not actually trying to hurt the company you work for, but you're just trying to find where the gaps are, expose them, and then get them fixed, which does sound like a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's they call it ethical hacking. So, I think there's actually... there's a couple certs. One of them, I don't recommend this cert, which is called a CEH, Certified Ethical Hacker, but that one's just a multiple choice. I mean, in this field, you really have to get real technical. By the way, I mean, a multiple choice question is not going to really help you in this field.
Sorry, Bruce, you go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, for the people who might be listening to this, who are very either young in their career or haven't figured out their career, how do you even find something like this or find that you like it? Because I have a computer science degree and background, but I am not a security person because that's a next level of intelligence that I'm too stupid for. Like, how do you know when, oh yeah, I'm going to go the route of offensive security. I'm going to become an ethical hacker. Like, were there signs or things that our listeners might need to be aware of that could encourage them down this path?
Well, so I'll give two answers to that. So there's two websites that I really recommend. The one of them is Hack the Box, as well as Try Hack Me. So if you go through those and you're like, hey, this is my jam, you know, totally go for that. I mean, the certs are like $200-$300 and people are looking for pen test. I mean, they have to stay in compliance. So every corporation needs to stay in compliance and they need a third party pen test. So they have to go to a consulting firm and be like, hey, we need a pen test this year. And you come in for about 4 to 5 weeks, conduct the pen test, and then you're on your way to the next company.
Is it contractual?
Yeah, it's okay. Contractual. So I work for a consulting firm and we have different clients. So it's really cool because you get to see different networks. So you have kind of a wide range of like, oh, you have to adapt to this network or that network, or how do they set this up? Do they have a Cisco, Palo Alto, things of that nature?
Have you ever, and obviously don't disclose anything confidential, but have you ever like gotten to one of these clients and just be like, oh, wow, like test zero, just like setting up a foundation, we found a gap. This is going to be rough.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy because I've worked with some people that did, you know, server room stuff, and the way they said they have like a set of passwords that are like password one, password 123, password exclamation point. And I don't blame them because they have like maybe 30, 40 servers to, you know, re-rack and, you know, do this whole change order or what have you. And it's like, I don't want to remember every single password, you know, for this specific server. Now there is password managers that you can make it a little bit better, but when you're just there overnight and you're trying to get it done, I can see where that, you know, man labor takes a lot out of that.
Right. What would you say like a day in the life looks like for you in this role?
Honestly, just spinning up VMs, learning as much as I can. When there's a client, I mean, they get my full attention for the most part. And it's really weird hours. So for any of the listeners here, if they want to get into this, just know that a lot of the pen testing activities are going to be done at night. So right. It's kind of like the typical, it's like the typical hacker, like you're in the night, you know, you're in your bedroom at night trying to figure this stuff out. But, you know, it's kind of true because, you know, a lot of the clients would say, hey, we need this at 8 p.m. to 5 a.m. That's your testing window. So at 5 a.m., I can't test on their network because, you know, they're running business hours. So right. They don't want anything to break during that time.
Good. Interesting. So you got to be a night owl for this job.
You kind of, because some clients want it on business hours. But for the most part, you have to be a night owl. And I mean, I would say most, like, you're going against things that are like, you know, I mentioned Cisco. You know, those that are like, yeah, they do mess up on security sometimes, but you're looking for that one, like it's a needle in a haystack. Essentially.
Right.
It's probably like the integrations between there, like custom things that they do where you probably find, that would be my assumption anyways, you probably find the most gaps, not like on the Cisco, you know, machine itself, but however they're integrating into stuff or in other systems and they've connected everything. That's probably where I would assume you would find the most.
Yep. That's actually, or like, I remember this one thing, they were sending out, clear text passwords through their LDAP. So they had the, basically they had a Citrix, you know, the video caller. Every time those endpoints would log into the corporate network, they would send their username and password out in the clear web through LDAP ports. So I could see that being internally in their network. So having everyone's credentials, you know, it didn't matter how complex it was. I could see it.
Yeah. So your day kind of looks like, you mentioned VMs, so like virtual machines, just for anybody out there that's a fresher. So it's kind of like you're spinning those up connected in their ecosystem, like on their servers or something like that. And then essentially you're probably like writing scripts, or you have predefined scripts to, you know, find certain vulnerabilities and generate reports, something along those lines?
Well, so it's not really generating scripts. So I would say in this role, like people have this common misconception where you need to be like some advanced coder to be, you know, breaking into cybersecurity. I mean, it helps, but it's not like, big requirement. You just need to know how to use the tools because they're already written for you. Or if you need to edit a script, you need to learn how to read that code and then be able to edit to your need. Because some of them are POCs, you know, proof of concept for this environment or that environment.
Interesting.
So I teach cybersecurity on this side, and I always get that question, do I need to know how to code? And the answer is like, not really, but you need to know the logic.
Right.
That's my curiosity is, so it seems like when you approach one of these type of situations where, you know, you give a new client, you're going to be kind of looking at what they're doing and what they're doing wrong. Like, how much creativity is required? Like, and then, you know, again, this is because I'm not that smart when it comes to technology, but like in my mind, I'm almost thinking like you're playing Where's Waldo, like trying to find the cracks in the system, but like you have your set of tools that you're used to. And then is there an additional skill or mindset you have to have to kind of actually go in and figure out what's broken?
Yeah. So Kali Linux is kind of like the operating system that most pen testers use, and their motto was try harder. So they had to take that down for legal reasons because people were like physically trying to do, you know, it was kind of taken towards their mental health. So right. I don't know what their motto is now. But that's kind of the mentality. Like if you're persistent and you're willing to find something, I mean, I'm not going to lie. There's been a couple of pen tests where I was like, there's literally nothing I could find. And I spent maybe 80 hours on this looking.
Wow.
That's what I was wondering. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not like I'm, you know, you're not going to be able to find everything because sometimes there is nothing. And sometimes it's the client's fault. And sometimes it's like, I just couldn't find anything.
Right.
But it's more of that persistency in this field because you might not be able to find something.
Right. Man, that's so interesting. If you guys remember, there used to be something called like Bug Bounty Hunter or something like that, where like literally like a group of people would just like try to hack corporations and then get paid to be like, hey, we found this vulnerability. We exposed it. We'll take it down if you pay us. but one of the things they were trying to do was just trying to like find vulnerabilities and help other companies out. And I think for a while, like there was a whole like Reddit forum about how people were getting jobs from it because they were like, oh, we should hire these people because they obviously know what they're doing. So, and then there was like even times when like, I don't know if you guys have toll roads, you know, where people would put like SQL on their license plate and like drop tables that were giving out tolls. Like there's so many of those things that were just blatantly obvious. And so all of this just reminds me of those things that happened probably, you know, 20 years ago.
It's actually funny because the I'm on Bug Crowd, so I've done a couple of those bug bounties as well. Mm-hmm. I've only gotten paid like $300, but some people make six figures. Yeah,
no doing, way.
Yeah, just doing bug bounties. They don't work for anybody and they work for themselves. But they have a whole system rigged up. One of my friends does that, and his server, like he has a miniature server room in his like little condo, and I'm like, I don't know how you do this.
The electrical bill must be insane.
Yeah.
But he makes a sizable income. Tesla, if you find, yeah, they have categories. I know besides what Tesla's going through right now, but they have categories where like if you find this class of vulnerabilities here, then they would pay out like $50K just for that one bug.
Interesting.
But obviously that bug is pretty hard to find.
Right. So this is something that like they've seen before, but they can't replicate, basically.
Yep.
Interesting. Like this is a whole, this is like a whole underworld that I've never really, and what's funny is I'm going to a security conference literally in like a week.
But I was about to say, that's what RSA is. It's in the name.
It's in the name. But I'm in storage. So like, I don't think about security beyond securing the storage box. Like this is like network and like consumer grade, like finding a bug in a Tesla is such an interesting concept because we don't think about cars as something that need cybersecurity. We think they need impact security, right? So like, this is just all very cool to think about.
Yeah, it's actually. Sorry.
No, you go ahead.
I was going to say cybersecurity is not just about tech. There's also things called social engineering. I don't know if you guys remember the MGM attack.
Mm-hmm.
That was just through a phone call through help desk.
No also, way.
Yeah, so there's a famous video from, I think it was DEF CON, where the lady calls with this, like an audio play with a baby, and able to get into this guy's bank account and lock him out with just one phone call.
Wow.
That's wild. I didn't realize it was a phone call that took them down. I did, you know, I think we, I can't remember if we talked about it on the podcast or if I talked about it in a different venue, but the recent bank heist that happened in, I want to say it was China, was through a Zoom. And it was basically just the CEO and the CRO were being impersonated via AI and basically told the guy who could wire money to wire them $10 million. And they got it through impersonation, digital impersonation, but still, like, social engineering is wild, and it's probably going to get worse.
It's good. Absolutely. With AI and everything, and, you know, the ability, even on your iPhone now, you can basically replicate your voice for accessibility reasons, you know, speak a couple 100 words, and now they can basically say anything using your voice. So it is absolutely going to get worse.
So how do go ahead.
I was going to say, there's another section of cybersecurity, which is physical pen test, and that's personally my favorite. Clients don't request it at all because it's not in compliance, but that's almost like lock picking, as well as like flippers. Yeah, there's also the have you guys heard of the Flipper Zero?
Yeah,
I don't know that.
Yes.
I want one. They're cool.
Yeah, there's a lot of cool tricks. Or like, there's also, my manager actually has one of these mini computers that is a extension cord. So like, if you're plugging your phone and you're plugging into a computer, or like, it's like you can just connect to the Wi-Fi or whatever, but it looks like an extension cord. So that's pretty cool. But yeah, that's definitely my favorite, because, you know, replicating, you know, your fob key or your identification card and things, that seems like movie stuff, you know, but it's real life.
For and those Flipper, that haven't seen the Flipper Zero.
Say, someone explained that. I think now it's coming back to me. I think I've seen it.
It's so cool. I like it. Firstly, it's called Flipper because it's got like a little dolphin on the little display, but it's this hand sized. I mean, it's like, it's smaller than a phone, but it's this like white plastic, like three button. It almost looks like a Tamagotchi, like, or a Digivice, but it's basically just like the ultimate hacking tool for getting into different signals and frequencies. And you can program it to replicate your car keys, or you can use it to get into other people's cars. Like, it does a lot of things, but it literally looks like a children's toy. Squidboy can explain it way better than I can.
Yeah, it's basically, it's kind of like a Raspberry Pi, or like just a mini computer with a bunch of scripts. That's essentially what it is. It does have readers. One of the coolest things I've seen with Flipper Zero is where they actually, I think the city actually fixed this bug. I forget what city it was, but someone put an extender on it, and basically they would go through every stoplight and just change it green for them. So all the other stoplights would be red, and they would just go. So, or like one of my other favorites, some guy went to Walmart and they changed the announcements to whatever he wanted the announcements to be. Like, it's a fun little toy, but it does hit that gray area where it's like, you can buy it for, like, you know, research or educational purposes and things of that nature, but you can definitely do some damage with it.
Right. Man, this sounds like such an interesting thing to, like, get into a YouTube rabbit hole with. I got to look this up and try to find some ridiculous videos to post.
I'm surprised you haven't seen it yet, Clark, because this definitely seems like something you would buy and, like, become obsessed over.
You better watch out. We don't live too far.
Only $169.
Ooh, you shouldn't have told me this. I'm going to wreak havoc on our local tri-state area.
Clark is not far from me. I am now worried for my own safety.
Yes, you will be hacked. Prepare yourself.
It's the coolest thing. Squidboy, do you get to play with this at all for your work, or is this just for fun?
It's a little bit of both. So, you know, definitely we do offer a physical pen test if a client asks for it, but it's typically not in their compliance, you know, it's not in the corporate compliance requirement. So I'm open to doing one if any of your guys listeners are looking to do a physical pen test. But it's not really required.
You know, that's actually a good shout out.
Do this. don't do this to a corporate strategy technology because there are going to be loopholes. I know because I built it. So please don't hack us.
Don't hack us. But if you need an ethical hacker, the easiest way to do it is go to our Discord, which you can get to through our link tree, which is in our show notes. Super easy. But Squid Boy, obviously, you know, if you need clients and they're listeners, that's how you get in touch with them.
That's awesome. So Squid Boy, I'm curious, I have probably one or two more questions, but what's like the biggest challenge to your kind of work that you run into?
Yeah, so, you know, I mentioned that most people is on, they're cybersecurity consultants when they do this type of work. The biggest challenge is that you're the subject matter expert, right? Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like other consulting challenges. It's like, if you have a client, they expect you to know every single, you know, nook and granny. And, you know, quite frankly, you can't, you know, no one knows everything. Mm. So kind of playing that, you know, oh, okay, I need to learn this, and this. And it's okay. I mean, it's like, you're not going to know everything, but it's about like learning as quickly as you can for that specific client. So that's kind of the biggest challenge in this field is learning as much as you can right before you go to a client facing call.
Right. Because you kind of have to know everything about their setup, their infrastructure, their technology. So, you know, just hopping in like right away, you got to know, how do I find those contacts who can tell me this information so that I can be effective at what I need to do?
Yeah. I mean, that kind of generally applies to any consulting gig because you're only there for a couple weeks.
Right.
So to be expected to know the infrastructure itself, like someone that's been there for 20 plus years, is near impossible. Mm. So you have to learn very fast, or actually just kind of, you know, piece together things very quickly.
Have you ever upset anybody with your findings?
Yeah, so that's another funny thing, because I've had some clients that's like, oh no, we're so secure, and it's like, oh no, I don't think so. Those are the clients that I know are not secure when they said, oh, we have everything locked down.
Like if they said that, you know, you're rubbing your hands together, be like, this is going to be fun.
It's funny that you say that, because it's like, you know, the people that think they have the most security actually have the least security.
Yeah.
And I think because they don't have an open dialogue about it, because I think they've always been told, oh, yes, we do. Yes. You know, it's like yes men. Versus somebody else coming in and saying, oh, wait, no, actually, this is not that great.
Wow. Oh. That's super funny.
Mm-hmm. I'm not surprised, though. Like, the hubris of technologists is always their undoing. Always. Mm-hmm. Like, name it in science fiction and reality, name a time when someone was like, oh, yes, this will never go wrong. And it doesn't.
Titanic? Is that what you're referencing?
Since the dawn of time.
I don't know if you guys know, they're actually making a reenactment of the Titanic. Not a reenactment, but like a kind of a replica, I think.
No.
I don't know if you guys saw that.
No.
Is this at a theme park? Like, how are they doing this?
I think it's at a theme park. Someone told me about it.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it's unfinished.
That's hilarious. All right, hold on, guys. I'm going to hop on. Titanic
2. This billionaire thinks so. Excuse me?
Hop on aboard the Titanic, guys. It's going to be a great time.
My wife and I did a Titanic dinner experience once, and it was like really fun until the crash, and then it was really sad and depressing, and I'm like, man, yeah. You know, like, it's exactly what you'd expect it to be. But it was good. I do recommend, if you're ever in Florida, do the Titanic dinner experience. It's emotional.
Oh, interesting. Okay, this is good to now we know.
Okay. Well, I know we're coming up on over 30 minutes here, and I feel like I've learned so much. Squidboy, are there any like final closing thoughts you want to give the audience just in regards to your job and, you know, what people should think about as they think about offensive security?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, obviously be security aware, but honestly, just ask questions. If you guys really wanted to work in this field, I mean, I am in the Discord. I was going to give a personal thing, you know.
Yeah.
And another question was, like, because my bachelor's, I have two of them, which is in physics and math. And yeah, when I graduated, I was like, oh man, there's no, like, I could be a teacher or I could be a teacher. So I ended up doing a master's in cybersecurity, and that's when I came across this career field, and I just kind of took it and ran with it. And I think it's really cool what I do in corporate. And I think if you guys are interested, just, you know, head into the Discord and just, you know, personal message me, and I can give you resources and see if it's your jam.
That is awesome. I love it. I think we owe you, Squid Boy. I mean, we just want to say thank you for being an awesome part of the community, being willing to come on and, you know, talk about this. We'll certainly have to have you, you know, come back on at a future point. But everything you're just saying, you know, is something that I love about our community. It's, you know, the openness, the willingness to help each other. So thank you so much for being an awesome member of Corporate Strategy.
Yeah, not a problem. And that's actually the echoes of the ethical hacking community. We're pretty open. We usually help people out a lot. So
I love it. I love it. This has been a great episode. So thank you again for joining us, Squid Boy. And please, if you're listening and you need an ethical hacker, or you're interested in getting into it, or you just want to have a conversation, join our Discord, meet Squid Boy, meet all the cool people. We have a lot of cool people in our Discord, a lot of different walks of life, a lot of different career paths. If you need advice, or you're looking for a job or a client or what have you, it's the best way to connect, not just with us, but with everybody. There's a lot of good people in there. So I cannot recommend this enough. And it's how we met Squid Boy. So thank you again for joining us today. It's been amazing getting to talk to you about this. And now I feel like I've got some more nerdy hobbies to go kind of scratch my brain with. And if you
said it so well, I'm like, I want to go buy this thing and like play around with ethical hacking. Like, this just, as an engineer, this just piqued my interest. And like, I got to go mess around with this, get my hands dirty.
It just became that much harder for me to schedule Clark to get on these things. So thank you, Squid Boy.
Just what I need, one more hobby. Thanks, Squid Boy.
No problem.
And if you guys want to join the Discord, again, super easy. All you got to do, open up your podcast, look at the show notes. There's all the links. You click on that, that'll take you to our link tree. And from there, you can get into the Discord. You can get to our website. You can donate, because right now, this is a completely host-funded podcast, which means I'm the host that's paying for it. So if you want to help us out, you can buy us a coffee, and you can find all of this in that link tree. And if you like what you heard today, why not share with your friends? Give us a nice review, and let people know about the good work the Corporate Strategy is doing in your life and in the world around you. We appreciate your listenership. And as always, remember, double click those action items. I'm Bruce.
And I'm Clark. Gross.
You're on mute. We'll see you next week. And thanks again for joining us, Squid Boy.